Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Yellowstone. Academy Award winner Kevin Costner stars in his first ever television series, Yellowstone. Costner plays John Dutton, a ruthless Montana rancher fighting to save his land and family in one of the most ambitious cinematic television series ever. Yellowstone premieres Wednesday, June 20th at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on the new Paramount Network. It used to be Spike. Now it's the Paramount Network. You can watch Yellowstone and Your Bar Rescue in one big old heaping spoonful of cable goodness. Yellowstone with Kevin Costner, Wednesday, June 20th, 9, 8 Central on the Paramount Network. Also want to mention to you, lovely people, next Thursday, as we do this podcast, June 21st, doors at 6, show at 7, The Profit Bar in Dallas, Texas is the site of our live show. What kind of live show will it be, you ask? Well, it is the 100th episode of Puck Soup, Dave Lozo.
You know what that means. We're going to give everybody a free $100 bill who shows up and comes out and supports us.
We are so not going to do that. Our NHL Awards episode after the real NHL Awards, in which Lozo and I will give out our own awards. It is going to be a hootenanny, a guest's games.
Wait. A hootenanny might actually be a thing in Dallas.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not going to be an actual hootenanny, whatever that is.
It's going to be a hoedown hootenanny.
Oh, no.
We're going to shoot guns into the air and see where the bullets fall.
Want a line dance?
The Profit Bar is at 2548 Elm Street. Nightmares. Dallas.
Again with that joke? 2 weeks in a row?
It's going to be super fun. We are obviously going to play Schlem Code with a Dallas twist. Mm-hmm. And also, if you come to the show, it is going to be a Q&A there exclusive to you. We're not going to put it anywhere else. It's just going to be there for your edification.
For us.
$12 advance, $15 at the door, the Profit Bar. It's ticketfly.com is where you get your tickets. You can probably get the tickets off the Profit Bar site, but you could also get them off the Puck Soup Twitter. So we're going to see you there Thursday, June 21st. Very excited about this. We've done a lot of shows on the Eastern Seaboard. This is our first show in Texas.
Yeah, and it's going to be 5 or 6 days before the Hockey Hall of Fame announces its inductees. And maybe we might talk about Sergei Zubov's chances while we're in the city
of
Dallas.
I'm going to get real sick of talking about that at that live show.
I love it.
Anyway, Profit Bar, our gig, Yellowstone. Kevin Costner played Superman's dad. That's it.
Montana ranchers.
Enjoy.
Don't fuck with them.
Enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
Hey, everybody. It's Dave Loza. I don't really work anywhere full time, but I do a lot of stuff at Vice Sports, so I like to mention them off the top. They're good people.
And I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, and you're listening. I'm sorry, you're in Puck Soup. I'm using my announcer voice, for it is an official thing that we are doing here.
Yes.
We are talking about real news, Dave Lozo. Breaking news from Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa, comma, Ontario,
Ottawa,
comma, Canada.
Comma,
North America, comma.
North
comma,
America.
Comma.
According to the Ottawa Citizen.
Which one? yes.
God damn it.
It is high. It is far. It is gone.
A bozo named Lozo goes Rozo, the Flozo.
1-0 Puck Soup.
Melinda Carlson has filed an application for an order of protection against the longtime girlfriend and fiance now of Senators forward Mike Hoffman,
fiance
alleging
now.
A campaign of harassment that plagued the Carlsons after the death of their son and through much of last NHL season. Monica Carrick, I believe, would be the way we pronounce her last name.
See, I was saying Sarek the whole time, but I guess that makes more sense.
Sarek is the Vulcan that Kirstie Alley played in Wrath of Khan.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. maybe that's how is it spelled in Wrath of Khan? I don't even know.
S-A-R-E-K.
Oh, is it?
And this is C-A-R-Y-K. I don't know how you get a... How do you get a sound from C-A? I'm going to vacation in California.
Yeah, that's a good point. Wait, now I got to sit here the whole time you're talking to try and think of a CA.
As we said, this story took place in Ottawa, Canada.
Ça va is a French word that means how are you? Maybe she's French. Oh, point Lozo.
Can we talk about the photo choices, by the way, of the Ottawa Citizen? Everybody's seen this story by now.
I know. I've seen a lot of cleavage with this really heavy, sad news story that I really don't know if that's...
I was talking about the fact that... So
that and the other one.
Melinda and Eric Carlson look like a picture-perfect couple. Erickson, sort of a tuxedo jacket with a tie, and Melinda looks resplendent. Monica Carrick, meanwhile...
So you wanted to say Sarek.
is with Mike Hoffman looks a lot like Jim from The Office in his little tuxedo. And then I'll show you the picture.
Yeah.
She looks like the conniving woman from a Lifetime original movie.
Those photos, I think, were all... I don't know how many photos of like Mike Hoffman and his girlfriend together there are. Yeah. So maybe you're limited.
I'm not trying to make fun of women here. I'm just saying that the photo choices by the photo editor are telling part of the story.
Right. Also, and the thing is, the two Carlson photos are like the one where they're like dressed really well and she's in a low cut dress, and the other one you can tell is from when he had the Achilles surgery, because he has like the brace on one of his arms. Mm-hmm. So like you can just tell exactly when the photos were. I guess again, there's not a lot of photos of like the people together, so you're kind of limited.
According to Eric Carlson's wife, Melinda.
My wife.
Monica Carrick has uttered numerous statements wishing my unborn child dead. This is in her sworn statement to the court. She uttered that she wished I was dead and that someone would take out my husband's legs to end his career. She has posted over 1,000 Dave Lozo negative and derogatory statements about me as a professional. Posted means on the internet.
Like, I'm guessing that's like Facebook, right?
Because Facebook, Instagram was where a lot of this stuff happened. Like over 1,000 is a lot.
Because like, they all can't be burner accounts. Like, that's a lot of... I mean, I guess they could be if you're really dedicated to it. It's so crazy.
Her username was Sandy Dandy 45.
But that was only for one of the comments, though, right? That wasn't for, like, 800 of them.
Yeah, and she... Allegedly, by the way. She wrote, I feel bad for the baby. He didn't have a chance with Melinda popping painkiller medication every day. And this was something that Carlson himself called out for the comment. And so Hoffman has said that there is, quote, this is his statement to the Citizen after he kind of no commented it before. There is a 150% chance that my fiance Monica and I are not involved in any of the accusations that have been pursued that are coming our way. Now, there's two ways to read this. First off, is that he said my fiance Monica and I are not involved, which could just mean that, you know,
together they're
one of them's not involved. Also, why not 200%? Why 150?
Well, Greg, let me tell you a thing about a thing called the metric system. Their 150 is our 100. That's how it works.
So I just want to point out, this is the craziest fucking story I've ever heard. I can't wrap my brain around the idea that there are... Think of if you were at work.
Okay.
And you were like, wow, someone wrote a really rude thing about my wife on Instagram.
Right.
You know what? I bet it's the wife of my coworker. Like, there has to be so much water under the bridge between these two that immediately you know who it is. And, you know, we talked to Alex Pruitt from Sports Illustrated later in the show, and this came up. The fact that four different wives of four different ex-senators all came out at the same time and said either, oh, we knew this was going on, or, yep, this totally makes sense.
Some of them
that it
are current. It's Craig Anderson's wife, right? Wasn't Craig Anderson's wife?
I thought it was Andrew Hammond's wife, Turris's wife. And then a couple of others. But
I thought one of them was Craig Anderson's wife. But, like, whatever. The point is just, like, yeah, it seems like this was, like, a known thing for a long time. I'm guessing, like, if they're all anonymous, you know, made up burner handles, I'm guessing like it didn't start that way. Mm-hmm. So it's just like you see the first, say, 85 of the 1,000 are from her, like under her name, and then she stops doing it, and then it comes up again. Like, it's not like a thing where like there's a bunch of people doing it, you know, where it can be like plausibly someone else. Like, there's probably so many people making jokes and wishing ill on a dead baby.
Or it's like it's a bunch of people that are all doing it under one handle. It's like Eklund back in the day, where it's just the pseudonym. for the number of people all being insiders at the same time.
And like,
or conversely, this is all Brian Colangelo. It could possibly be that as that, well.
So, oh my God! So this morning, I finished up an Ottawa Senators thing at like 10 a.m. I wrote it, sent it in. And by like 12:25, there was already two more new things that I had to go back and be like, I need to fix this.
It's
and
crazy.
There was a paragraph in my thing where I just referenced the Brian Colangelo thing. Like, yeah, you know, burner account, wife, medical information, got him fired. And I had a line there. I was like, well, at least there's no burner account situation with the Ottawa Senators. And then like fucking Travis Yost is like, yeah, there might be a burner account situation on top of all the, like, think about everything that's happened to Ottawa since 2018 started.
Here, let's
Melnick.
Melnick. Okay, but Melnick is not. Melnick is a topic that has several subtopics.
That's what I mean. Like Melnick is
Melnick being cheap and a horrible owner. Melnick saying that it's the fans' fault for not supporting the team. Yeah. Melnick and the arena
threatening to move them right before the outdoor game.
Melnick and relocation. Melnick out billboards.
Melnick not meeting with the town, the city. About the downtown thing anymore.
But Melnick also holding town halls with the fans to try to calm them down.
Yeah, like there's that. There's the fucking assistant GM allegedly rubbing the shoulders of some teen shuttle driver at a hotel.
A male teen shuttle driver who has subsequently taken out a restraining order against the assistant GM, who, by the way, his trial date is now after the NHL draft, so there's a very good chance he'll be with the Senators at the draft, apparently.
Which is, like, there's that. Like, there's the baby clothes. There's so many fucking things that have happened.
Wait, tell them about people might not know about the baby clothes.
The baby clothes was there was, like, these Ottawa Senators, like, onesies, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, I don't know, onesies, right? That's a baby clothes thing. And they somehow, I don't know how a onesie could be a choking hazard, but apparently they had to recall them because they were a choking hazard. Now, I'm not going to put that on, like, Pierre Dorion. Like, he's not approving that, but, like, all of these things happened, and like it just doesn't
but hold on.
Feel
you,
like
you forgot the Daniel Alfredson thing.
Oh, that's part of the Melnick thing. Yeah.
Melnick alienated Alfredson, so the signature player of your franchise doesn't want anything to do with your franchise because of the owner.
And Erik Karlsson's going to be gone anyway.
The Erik Karlsson trade drama, the Mike Hoffman trade drama, the Kyle Turris trade that did happen.
Matt Duchene's nowhere close to probably signing an extension. Mark Stone's offer sheet.
Bobby Ryan's contract.
There is just endless
Craig Anderson's
shit.
Contract. Craig Anderson liking a thing about how the Ottawa Senators lineup is a disaster and someone referencing the two goalies as shit and crap.
Shit and crap.
And Craig Anderson liking the tweet.
And there's just no sign from the organization that they have any of this under control. You know? Like the Sixers like took them a week. They're like, we gotta let you go. And, like, here you have the AGM, like, no suspension, no nothing. The trade stuff with Karlsson. Like, how are they ever going to remedy the whole Karlsson-Hoffman thing? Like, they have to trade both of them now.
The thing – well, you did it. No. They can – okay, here's the thing about Hoffman.
Hoffman for sure.
Hoffman's really interesting because, like
– but Karlsson
there was
be
all
traded.
That talk about them trading Mike Hoffman at the trade deadline. And teams like the St. Louis Blues were really interested in dealing for him. And I wonder – listen, the team knew about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they had to know. They had to know about her being a wackadoo. Apparently,
they claimed to only have found out after the end of the season.
Okay,
but
Hoffman's been on the block, and we were all like, "That's kind of weird." And I put out a tweet, and people have been asking me about it. I had heard that there was some personal issue between Hoffman and the team that probably meant he was going to be traded this summer. I heard it from two different people. And so I didn't know it was this. I don't think anybody knew it was this. But there was definitely something there that said that he probably wasn't going to be there. Karlsson's going to go like this. You know how it's going to go because they can't simply just trade him. They're going to give him an offer. It's going to be frugal as shit because it's from Melnick. They're going to say we made our best offer based on the economics of our situation. He's going to reject it, and then he stays because he loves Ottawa, which is very very. High odds at this point, low probability.
He couldn't stay before this. Like now, he can't stay.
Or he gets traded, and the trade's going to be real interesting because the trade's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be a team that acquires Karlsson with an eye towards giving him an extension, or you're going to have a whole different set of trade partners, like the Lightning, for example, who are going to be like, "We want him for a year."
Yeah, but he probably wouldn't want that. You know?
Why not?
No player ever wants that. What was the last player to like want just a 1 year deal?
Hold up, but he wouldn't want to play with the Lightning?
Not for a year.
With his injury history? He was basically a de facto Lightning player during the All-Star game.
I mean, he'll play for the Lightning, but not just for 1 year without an extension done.
You think so?
I mean, no player, you said it yourself, like no player ever wants to just do the 1 year team thing.
You know, it is interesting if he goes there, because if they wanted to keep him, they have to get Kucherov done after this season.
Girardi's money comes off the books at the end of the season.
And McDonough's money comes off the books at the end of the season. Yeah. And you could... I mean, I don't think that... I think you trade Tyler Johnson if you want to get Tavares, but I think you keep him otherwise. But, like, they could potentially make it work. They'll be top-heavy as shit, and it's going to be like, you know, Richards, Le Cavalier, and San Luis all over again, and Boyle. But and Boyle got, you know, chicaned to San Jose. But they could conceivably have Carlson, Hedman, and Stamkos on that roster if they wanted it, and Kucherov.
And then they could have those guys play 14 minutes, and then John Cooper will play Dan Girardi 27 minutes in the playoffs because he's gritty. And then they'll lose in seven to some team that they should have beaten five.
Yeah. And they'll have Cedric Paquette in order to talk to the French media.
Let's
dial it back. What was your reaction when you heard the story? Was it the craziest shit you've ever heard?
I mean, I didn't think it was the craziest. It's crazy. It's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, somebody saying crazy shit. Sure, that happens all the time. But it's the context of it.
Fiance wished another player's wife death, and also the death of her child.
I mean, Greg, in the world today, there's so much going on with wars and our president that, you know, I just don't... Much like that guy who... Much like David Corn. You know what? I just like to look big picture and not think about
David Corn's like a pundit that was on MSNBC a lot, or is on MSNBC a lot, and he tweeted that he wanted to run up to every Capitals fan that was wearing their jersey the day after the parade and shake them and tell them that Trump had authorized concentration camps.
Yeah. Good. First of all, if you do that on the train, like you're not the sane person.
Like I mocked him for that, but I want to just add an addendum to my mocking. Bless you.
Bless you.
Which is that...
An addendum to my mocking.
Does this fucking idiot think that, like, 60% of Capitals fans don't work for the government? Like, if you're talking about a fan base that might be plugged in and understanding what's going on with the administration...
There's a lot of dumb things.
It's that fan base!
It's incredibly dumb. But the thing that I thought about when I heard that story was, like, let's look at Katy Perry and Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There was some fighting there, right?
Bad blood, if you will.
And now they're friends again. I believe I saw that in a Twitter moment or something.
Really?
I think they might have reconciled the whole man stealing thing. But like, when there's a fight between two people, usually it's over something: money, a guy, a job, something. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how a fight happens where someone is rooting against the birth of a baby or like mocking the death of a baby. Like I feel like we're missing a step in there somewhere, because you don't just start there. It escalates to that. So like, if Hoffman and her have been together forever and Carlson have been together forever, like what's the trigger point that started the whole thing? That's the thing I want to know.
And you make a good point. I think people like, of course, what do you do in your first, see this thing go down is you try to figure out what the deal is with this person who's the instigator. So if you look through like her and Hoffman's history, I think they've been together since he was a pup.
They've been together for a long time. She got long time girlfriend in all the stories, not just girlfriend.
Right. So when this first happened, people were like, "Oh, you just got to get rid of this girl." It ain't that simple. Like you get the sense that they've been together for a long time, and maybe everybody knows that couple where it's like, one of them's a little crazy and the other one's always constantly apologizing for it and being like, you just don't understand who the real person is. Like, you could totally see that being the situation.
Right. But what happened between her and Melinda and Eric where she wants
his career to be over.
Yeah, his career to be over too.
Yeah.
Like that's, I don't know. Like I feel like we've only got like 30% of the story. Like James Duthie was on the radio today and he said something about how there's going to be more that comes out. Like, I feel like we need more details. Like no matter what happened, escalating it to ha ha ha, your baby's dead is fucking, you know, there's no reason to bring it to that ever. But I want to know what happened where in her head she felt like that was an appropriate response.
The good thing about the hockey community is that I'm sure every rumor that comes out about the situation will be handled responsibly. and won't be hyperbolic. And and everyone who regurgitates some bullshit about that stuff will obviously do so in a responsible way.
Sure, they'll be in the know. They will think. Even like Duffy going on the radio and being like, "I know some crazy stuff, I'm not going to tell you."
Can we talk about Ottawa in the abstract, though? Like through the years,
Ottawa in the abstract.
Through the years, there might not be a team that has generated more batshit crazy rumors and innuendo on the down low than that franchise. I remember hearing shit about Heatley when Heatley asked for a trade that was really bad and not true necessarily. I'm not going to repeat them here, but like,
oh, so you're going to do the Duffy thing?
I am, because I'll just say that it was sex stuff, but I don't think it's true, and no one ever confirmed that it was true. It was a rumor that was bouncing around based on the shit that went down with that team. After they went to the Cup final, the hockey world was littered with stories about how it was just like cocaine fest there. And
cocaine's a thing you hear about like every team.
Yeah, but this was a special kind of like story as far as like it being a real problem for them. Like this organization for some reason has generated more weird shit and controversy. I mean, and not even like a list stuff, like the way Alfredson went.
Yeah.
It's so fucking strange.
Doesn't Melnick have to sell the team?
Like,
isn't that the only way out?
Is there a more inconsequential team in the grand scheme of things that
Florida.
Is more but is more consequential as far as gossip?
Yeah, it does seem weird, doesn't it?
Right?
Like, it doesn't add up. But yeah, like there's no, like with the Sixers, they can just fire their GM, even if like his wife was the one who did it or not did it, and she just took the fall. Either way, like that's their out. Like there's no way to fix this. Like you can't force Melnick to sell. Like
no, and people have been talking about the NHL stepping in and being the moral barometer here. I'm like,
can't.
Do you understand this is the NHL?
I know. Like they're not going to do that. Like there needs to be like a crime.
Well,
and there's not a crime by Melnick. Like,
they won't step in because the NHL can't be the moral barometer of anything. There might not even be a barometer in that building, come to think of it. But
wait, are you telling me the League of Principles?
Yeah.
The Declaration of Principles League doesn't have moral high ground, Greg?
Well,
Greg.
I mean, the Declaration of Principles is separate because, as you know, they were endorsed by the Pope.
The Pope loves a good slap a shot.
God, I know I said it before. I'll say it again. Sitting in that press conference and everything's going fine. It's like, we've got the women's leagues here. We got these leagues here. We're all going to work together and make hockey a great place. And then Pat LaFontaine getting up there, and I've got a letter from the Pope. And we're all just like, what?
You know, like all morning he was super pumped about just shouting that out at the press conference too. Like he's just leaving his house. He's like, be cool, be cool, be cool. Don't blow Gary's spot.
Yeah.
Just,
right, right.
I got a Pope letter. He's like, all right, play the music. And then it's dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Is that the Young Pope theme?
It's the Young Pope theme.
Mm-hmm. The kangaroo comes by. Yeah. The league. Here's the thing about Melnick. Okay, league kind of likes him because he's the reason there's still a team in Ottawa.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's the problem.
How much longer can the team be there, though? The way it's going.
If he sells, who's coming in?
Somebody bought the Carolina freaking Hurricanes.
The Carolina Hurricanes have an arena deal and are a product of being real shitty on the ice. The Senators have had some success in the last 10 years.
And still nobody goes.
Because the arena is in the fucking Yukon. They got to get a downtown arena. No one's been able to make it work. If Melnick's not there, I don't know who owns the team.
But like Melnick's not even trying to make the downtown arena work thing right now. He's holding out
pissy.
He's holding out for like a new mayor who's going to be more, you know, owner friendly. Yeah. And if that doesn't happen, then what? Like,
that's the NHL's play usually is, you know, lean on the mayor to make a deal.
That worked
like
in Calgary. Right? Yeah. I just don't know any, because imagine if you're an Ottawa Senators fan and like you already knew this year was going to be bad anyway because Carlson's in his last year. He's either gone in June or he's gone in like November, like a Duchesne thing. Mark Stone, like people really think he's going to get off or shit. Like they're going to lose. They're going to be bad for a very long time.
Can you imagine?
I don't know what to do.
How things have gone with the Canadian teams and the strength of the Canadian dollar and McDavid's up there and Matthews is up there.
Mm-hmm.
And in like 4 years' time, Calgary's in Houston and Ottawa's in Kansas City.
I don't know. I can't figure out another way out. And like, even if you're a Senators fan, like, are you at this point? Would you really be that sad if the team went somewhere else. Like what are you invested in at this point? Like there's not going to be any winning. Your best players are leaving. There's garbage in the front office. There's garbage at the top. Like, do you really want to give Eugene Melnyk more money next season? Like, man, be like the Winnipeg Jets. Say goodbye for a few years, hang out, and then next thing you know, like a new team comes and
rehabilitate
like
your image.
15, yeah.
Well, listen, despite the fact that it's a circus, I'm sure everyone will want to come and see Matt Duchene skate with nobody next year. And if you want to, there's only one place to do it. That'd be SeatGeek.
Trash Duchene poop.
Proud sponsor of the Puck Soup Podcast. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek, the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Dave and I, we've got the SeatGeek app on our phone. Did you use it when you went to that baseball game recently, Dave Loza?
No, my friend got some sweet free tickets.
If you don't have a good friend like Dave Loza, you're going to need the SeatGeek app. It's by far the easiest way that we found to shop for tickets. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time, saves you money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. It's an invaluable part of SeatGeek.
It is.
To understand exactly what you're getting for your money.
You know what it gives you?
What's that?
Confidence.
Best of all, SeatGeek listeners can get... Puck Soup listeners can get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Might as well be SeatGeek Podcast.
One in the same.
Download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells SOUP. For $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. If you are in the New York metropolitan area, might I suggest using the SeatGeek app to purchase some U.S. Open tickets, which is a thing that's coming up soon.
Interesting.
And SeatGeek is a good way to go and find some really primo seats for that event. If you've never been, it's a lot of fun. $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Enter the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells SOUP, on the app. And thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. Our guest this week is a guy who was super happy to be on this podcast.
Was he?
And then probably regretted every minute of it.
Yeah, I think like he didn't realize what he was getting into.
He is Alex Pruitt,
a lot of poop
Sports
talk.
Illustrated, one of our favorite writers, a really brilliant writer, like a guy that Lozo and I kind of wish we could probably write like.
No, I'm good.
I kind of wish I could write like him. Anyway, Pruitt's great, and we talk a lot of cap stuff and concussion stuff and Russia stuff, and here we go.
He's fantastic. Enjoy him.
Alex Pruitt is a writer for Sports Illustrated who just revealed to myself and Dave Lozo he doesn't know who Candlebox is.
Alex, your time here is now over.
Well, this has been fun.
Thanks for coming
guys.
In.
This is wonderful.
What's your favorite EDM band?
I'm so sorry.
What would be the first band
Petey Pablo.
Petey Pablo? What was the first album you bought?
One of the Nows, for sure.
Like, now, this is Now Here's Music volume?
Now, that's what I call music.
Yeah, okay, there it is.
Yeah, but not the first one. Like I don't, definitely single digits. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Columbia House is?
I had Destiny's Child. My parents made me get the, do you know the what restricted versions.
Do you know what a CD is? Have you ever held a hard
cassette? Yeah, I have one at my
cassette.
Bank, actually. I open one.
Now that's what I call music was always interesting to me because... Did I get the name right that time?
I don't even know what that is.
You know what that
There's
is.
There's an exclamation. It's Now.
Yeah, Now.
That's what I call music.
This is the compilation thing where they would take all the hits that are on the radio and put them on one album.
Oh, maybe I do know what that
you know?
Is.
Because, like, growing up...
Heard a lot of Smash Mouth.
I think legit... Maybe like 60% of the bands that I got into as a kid because I heard them on soundtrack albums. The soundtrack album died. The compilation album kind of replaced that as the place where you get all your music.
Like I was like, the opposite. Like back then, I got it off the radio. And now, if I hear a song in like a Toyota commercial at the end of an episode of a TV show or in a movie, I'm like, oh, I got to download that.
I think TV might be the play. Like I was watching Legion this week and like I heard at least three songs and I'm just like, wow, these are great needle drops that I would want to go and find.
That's too many songs for a TV show.
It's not though. what if it's a cool TV show like on HBO? Like what was Vinyl?
The Leftovers.
Was Vinyl on HBO?
Vinyl.
Remember that show that was on for a second where Bobby...
Oh, yes.
Carnival, whatever the fuck.
Drugs, music.
Yeah, he's like, I'm in the 70s. I'm discovering the Stones. And HBO's like, you're also fucking canceled.
Yeah, you're also not funny and interesting or good.
So do you watch any peak TV, Alex Pruitt?
Man, I've fallen off so hard during the season. I don't know about you, but during the year, I just...
The playoffs destroy me. I never know what's going on for 2 months. I'm full of coffee and, like, all I do is watch hockey. Like,
the only
first
two things,
so disconnected.
The only two things I kept up with were Westworld and Billions.
I still haven't watched the new season of Westworld.
That's good.
It's good?
That's good.
Yeah?
A little bit slow, then it gets good.
Yeah.
Really? I've talked to so many people that are like, they just bailed after the first episode of the second season. They were like, this is it.
That fast, huh?
It's like all these diatribes by the blonde lady robot about what it means to be human and alive and feel, and it's just like,
it's one of those situations where as you're watching the show,
when I came to the West, the Western robot show about,
yeah,
the sex robot old West murder show.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's like when you watch Westworld, I feel like the whole thing, like the problem is that every time I watch the show in the credits, you always see the name J.J. Abrams. So you're like, okay, at some point,
it's going to go wrong.
At some point, it's going to be like, you know, the whole show's
taking. Where's the hatch?
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's going to be some bullshit that goes on, and you're just like a little bit wary of that. But it also has Jonathan Nolan's name on it, and that means that at least two, if it goes three seasons, at least two of them will be great, and then the third one will suck because Batman, you know,
is that Christopher Nolan's brother?
It's Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan.
Oh,
Nolan.
Look at that!
Yeah, the Nolan boys.
More nepotism in the world of
entertainment. Is he not as good? Is he less famous?
He's the writer. Chris is the visionary. Yeah. And Jonathan's like the
president.
He's like, hey, listen, I need to find out what to do with this top in my movie. In my movie Inceptions, can you come up with an idea?
What if in Dunkirk everyone under the age of 24 looks exactly the same and you can't keep track of any of the characters?
What if at the end of The Dark Knight Rises he turns to Commissioner Gordon and he says something like, I don't know, like, there's a child and you gave me a code, you know, so, can you suss that out for me, Jonathan?
What if, I don't know, say Joseph Gordon-Levitt just automatically knows he's Batman because they're both orphans?
Guys, can we not do this over Thanksgiving dinner? I'm just trying a nice family dinner here.
Jonathan, what if I got this idea to make Robert Williams is the villain, right? But I don't want it to be in, like, sunlight. I want it to be, like, nighttime all the time. Can I get that? Flip that. It's always daytime, and it takes place in Alaska.
It's Insomnia. It's the movie Insomnia.
Fuck.
Alex. Let's talk about the news.
I did not fucking brush up my voices before I came here.
Well, it's just a generic British guy. Alex, let's talk about the news that you broke this week. As you know, I ate the chicken parm when I was in D.C.
It
made me feel like shit. I ate it because of the novelty of... It's the same reason why women of a certain age come to New York and eat at Magnolia. It's because they want to eat the thing that Sarah Jessica Parker ate on Sex and the City. Well, I wanted to eat the thing that Alex Ovechkin allegedly eats before every game, which is
a giant kettle of chowder in Boston.
It's a giant greasy chicken parm with oil on it.
Did you have the spaghetti too? Or did you punt on that?
No, I did a classic fat guy move, which is to not weigh myself down with pasta, but instead to just spoon meat sauce into my mouth.
Jesus. Wow.
Eating chicken parm.
Like straight out of the cup?
Yeah, straight out of the cup.
Jeez.
So pasta just sat on your plate? You didn't eat the pasta part of it?
Well, the problem is that the pasta was naked. You had to put the sauce on the pasta.
Oh my God, the horror.
Well, so you just cut out the pasta middleman and just put the sauce right in your mouth.
I don't know about you guys, but like pasta that's been sitting there, like it's been delivered, it's been catered, but it's not in like a tray or anything. It's just in like a tin. Like, I don't need that shit. It's going to be straight up rubber. Wow. I don't need that. I just want to get the sauce and the meat. Now.
Was the sauce still warm?
Sure.
Okay.
It was Mama Lucia, so it was like B-.
It's primo.
You broke the news that Alex Ovechkin doesn't actually eat the chicken parm.
Yeah.
Now
I did.
Were you shocked when you found out?
I had like three people in the organization tell me. They were not. I don't think they were happy about the way the whole thing unfolded.
Yeah, because everybody called Alex fat for like a year.
That and like, well, yeah, and you go to like sponsorships, like they're not. Mama Lucia's is like not. They have Papa John's and like whatever Pizza Bullies or whatever sponsorship is. So like they show up at Kettler one day,
yeah,
giving out free pizza, and they have their own catering company there who's like selling stuff, and they're like, "What the fuck's happening? Like, why are you guys infringing?" So I think there was a little tension there.
So how did they tell you? Did you just like one day wake up and say, "This is a lie. Tell me the truth," and they were like, "Okay," or like did they like were they just waiting for the right time to spring the news?
I think I must have been digging around for. I mean, Alex Ovechkin is like he's very Babe Ruthian
digging around,
I think, in the way.
Like, yeah. I'm picturing like the all the president's men, like he's meeting with like people in the basement. It's like, hi, this is Deep Throat. No way. This is
Mario.
This is deep dish.
Are you saying are you,
deep dish?
Deep dish. Deep dish. Are you saying you tell me the fucking truth? Deep dish. Follow the sauce, Alex.
Follow the sauce.
Keep pulling at the spaghetti string. The truth is under.
Yeah,
there.
I just Lady and the Tramp that shit. And it just eventually came out. No, I mean I was doing reporting around Ovechkin. Kind of picking at the idea that he does not train or eat like a normal athlete right. in the 21st century does. And I think I brought up the Mama Lucci and someone was like, yeah, you know, he actually like doesn't eat the chicken parm part of it, which how much coverage you guys do at Mama Lucci is?
Well, Emily wrote the now false story that Alex eats the chicken parm.
Never trust
Emily went to Mama Lucci's and did like a video bit about how they make the chicken parm.
I thought you both went and ate it. Isn't that what happened?
No, they brought it to the arena. Like, what Alex said is true. Outside of the owner of Bark, Andre Fury, I've never met a single more craven fucking person to glom on the Stanley Cup final than a Mama Lucia guy.
Tony Robbins.
We'll get to that in a second. So Mama Lucia guy was there that day at practice where all of a sudden, like, all the Caps fans are coming out of practice and they're all mulling around for, like, autographs or whatever. And then they all leave because there's a fucking guy at a pizza truck giving away free pizzas to these people. And so, like, yeah, I could see why the team that's taken all this money, like Pizza Bolli's, must have been like, "What the fuck, Ted?" You know,
yeah, Papa John was not pleased.
Yeah, Papa John's is
yeah, that guy.
And so this guy was craving. So he would invite all the people to the place, and then like when Emily was there, he's like, "What if I just gave all you guys food? You and Greg and Levy and Melrose and stuff. We'll just give you all chicken parm. You could taste it yourselves." So of course I am, but now I feel really regretful.
To be fair, what a weird thing it is to order it and then just not eat it, and it just probably goes in the garbage.
Oh, you make fucking, you know, the money he makes every year.
So he orders the chicken parm, but doesn't eat the chicken parm part of it. He just eats the pasta part of it?
Yeah, so my understanding is at one time other players used to order. They wanted chicken parm. They would eat chicken parm pregame. I think like Marcus Johansson was involved or something. So he just still orders it because he's a superstitious guy.
Because he's superstitious. But then doesn't eat it.
Doesn't eat it.
And just eats everything else around
it. Eats the spaghetti with the cream sauce and the marinara sauce, whatever the hell he has with it.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. Wow. So Alex Ovechkin doesn't care about people that can't afford meals. He's just willing to waste money.
This is a guy, though, who used to have a Gatorade bottle of Coke on the bench.
Right.
With him and like...
Soda?
Yeah, soda.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just checking.
He's not, come on, he's not on the
Senators. LeBron James like that, just squirting it, just that powder right in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, but before you start spouting off about him being wasteful and not caring about people, this is a man who bought a homeless man a coat. Remember that story earlier this year?
I do remember. Wow.
He bought a homeless man a coat in Calgary.
Oh, right.
And
right,
then everybody
right,
found a reason to criticize him for like he hired a guy to be a homeless guy so he could buy him a coat because people
have
to
a lot of money,
people from talking about Putin. Remember that whole thing?
No, what it was? It was Larry Brooks said, great, he bought him a coat, but that doesn't make up for all the coats he didn't buy before that because that one coat doesn't cancel.
Yeah, and Damian Cox said, act like you've been in the cold before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not how you treat a coat if right. you're a real winner of coats. Gotta hate the sport.
What have you you've covered Ovechkin for a while. What do you think about the idea that this year was different for him? Do you think there was anything different for him this year outside of the fact that he's going to pop out a kid?
Yeah, I think he gave a crap.
Yeah,
in the defensive end, probably more.
Do you think
it's hard? Like, I wish this is where I wish we had like tracking and stuff, right? Because you could see visibly like his top speed was higher in the defensive zone, for instance, or he took, you know, a more optimal route to the puck in certain situations, or he wasn't like leaking out, you know, but it's all subjective. So we kind of have to go off our eye test. And
the one theory was that he was in better shape or he was just as heavy, but more toned.
I was told that he was in the best on ice conditioning shape he's been in. At least he reported in that shape.
I feel like we sort of not knowing about the pregnancy for most of the playoffs. I feel like there wasn't enough said about when he found out he was going to be a father, did he have a come-to-Jesus moment about the window closing on him because now he's old?
I think you also start, when you're married, you probably go out less.
You probably do.
Yeah, you're probably not going to rush a house late at night as much.
And also, I think that plays into his celebration because he knows in like a couple weeks.
That's not happening.
It for him, man. So he's getting all the partying now.
He's seen what happened to Corey Perry's numbers.
He's definitely changing a diaper in the cup, right?
Like, oh, well.
He has to.
Well, I mean, if he put his balls in it, he might as well change a diaper in there, too.
Oh, boy.
Come on, when you saw
the disrespect of the cup is something I will not stand for.
Hold on.
Cup should be kissed, caressed.
Let's talk more about that. Yes. I absolutely agree.
Yes. I am so tired of people having fun in this sport. It should be serious.
Does not belong at the bottom of a pool.
Does not belong at the bottom of the pool. It belongs held over your head in front of a church or perhaps at a children's hospital.
And by church, you mean Air Canada Center?
There's a couple strip clubs in Vegas that I would consider a church.
When we joked on this podcast about him having sex.
There's a segue. There's a segue.
With the Prince of Wales trophy.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So when you saw him in the bed with the cup, did you think that maybe...
Oh, an orgasm was had.
A thousand percent he did something.
The Prince of Wales was like in the other room, like a little upset. looking forlorn, just like around the corner. You pan out.
He just placed it in the crack of the door and said, "You watch."
It's in the closet. By the way, having a good time.
Where's his pregnant wife sleeping, by the way? Like, doesn't she need the bed too?
There's room for three in that bed. It looked like there was at least.
Honey, move over. Stanley needs more room.
He did tell Trotz early that morning, "Oh, I guess I got to have my wife sleep with me tonight."
Wow.
When the cup was coming in.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, jokingly, but yeah, you know.
No, not
Alex
jokingly.
Alex wakes up in the morning.
Alex Ovechkin made his pregnant wife sleep on the couch because he was sleeping with the cup tonight. And do you think he slept with the cup because that's what Sid did the first time he won the cup?
Well, everybody sleeps with the cup.
Do they?
Cup gets around.
It does.
Cup's a little bit of a party animal.
What did you think of their celebration, Alex, as far as the public nature of it?
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah.
Oh, tremendous. I wish I had kind of followed them.
Were you surprised that it was that public, or did you? Because this team at times can seem a little, you know, I feel like maybe they had this awakening during the playoffs of like the seeing the crowds in DC and seeing how much pain they've inflicted on these poor people, and having a certain connection with the city. That this wasn't going to be a behind velvet ropes celebration, but it was going to be a citywide.
Yeah, it makes sense in hindsight. I don't know what I thought in the moment, but man, like friggin'. I don't know, snow angeling and fountains and
push-ups.
Like, yeah, doing push-ups, chugging with people. Don Tito's, to take it the first... Well, that's a bold move, to take it the first night to one of the frattiest places in all of Clarendon, but a place that I think players frequent. Mm-hmm. And it just get absolutely smashed there with a cup, and, you know, they're bringing it down the stairs and people are cheering, and they're, like, spraying champagne off the roof. Yeah, I don't know. The comparison I heard from Ovechkin's agent was Messier in 94 after they win, and they throw a party so wild that they literally need to hire a bodyguard for the cup after that.
The scores party.
Yeah. It was a little reminiscent of that. I'm not sure if they're going to quite get to, like, what was it, in Boston? Maybe it was Marchand talking about, like, some veteran player came up to them and was like, you guys need to leave now. Like, just get your ticket and you need to go. Like, you guys have partied too hard. It's been 2 weeks in a row.
Like a veteran Bruin player?
Or maybe it was like an ex-player or something. I think it was in, like, his player tribute. Yeah.
My money's on Cam Neely.
1,000%.
Oh, that makes sense.
1,000% it was Andy Brickley. All right, you guys know. One of my favorite things we ever did on Puck Daddy was that graphic interpretation of what the Bruins drank the night they won the cup. Remember that?
Oh, the receipt?
The receipt. It was based on the receipt, and we did a graphic showing exactly how much they drank, and there was that one guy who drank, there was one Corona.
One Amstel Light.
No, it was an Amstel Light. Yeah. It was like an Amstel Light, I think it was, and we were all trying to figure out, who's the guy who had the Amstel Light? And it wound up being like the girlfriend of one of the players that was there.
It's so sad that I can remember that, but I can't remember anyone's phone number anymore. I can remember one beer on a receipt from 7 years ago. That's not my receipt, but I'm just like, hey, what's your number?
To be fair, it is Amstel Light.
I mean,
from what you've been able to glean, speaking of the Bruins, have all the Capitals tattoos been properly done and not misspelled?
Oh, I was really nervous with Burakovsky. He's a little bit of a head case. I think anybody in the locker room would tell you. Space Cadet is probably the right phrase for him. And he had a bunch of numbers that were his, I think his mom, dad, and two sisters' birthdays, and I was a little nervous about that one.
Yeah.
Or that he got the wrong date on the Stanley Cup clinching tattoo. That was pretty wild, right? They just take a party bus to Adams Morgan and get tattoos.
And get tattoos, yeah. It's
all the young guys, like Braden Holtby babysitting them, looking on, like...
Clutch play.
Yeah.
Do you... Burakovsky, I didn't know this until I was covering him during the playoffs, but he's infamous for injuring his teammates in practice. Like when he hit some dude with the... Yeah, I didn't know this. Remember, who was the guy who got hit by a shot in practice and had to come off? Was it Smith-Pelly?
Yeah, and then he scored a goal that
Apparently,
game.
Apparently, yeah. Burakovsky has the reputation of just fucking being a howitzer in practice to the point where guys get super pissed because he's constantly hitting them with pucks.
Yeah, he shoots real high in practice. Yeah. I know. And like Ovechkin can get away with it, I think. Yeah. Like Ovechkin, but... I mean, this, yeah.
Could you imagine the goddamn, the fucking controversy if, like, he injures a Devontae Smith-Pelly, who's, like, the John Druce of 2018 with a shot in practice?
I remember when Dominic Moore did it to Marty St. Louis at a morning skate. Like, he busted open his face. Like, he had, like, a crazy Iron Man streak going, and he just took a backhander, like, in one of those, like, two-on-O rushes, you know, where there's no one back, and, like, St. Louis went behind the net, and Moore, like, roofed it, missed it, right in the eye, towel, blood everywhere. His streak was over. And that was it. So it's like, you know, it doesn't have to be like a howitzer to end someone's season. Like, it could have been fucking...
This sport is so weird.
It's like the luckiest fucking... It's not a lucky run, but like everything kind of fell into place, right? I mean...
The way I've been talking...
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Because like, they had home ice the first two rounds, yet it feels like they were like underdogs in every single series.
Where would you put them, like, at the end of the regular season? Like, 10th, maybe? I don't know. 8th?
As someone who said they would get to the third round, I guess I have to say 4th.
we did call him as the cup champion. Sarah Kwok, your former guest, called him as a cup champions at the start of the year.
Damn.
For us. She also put Dallas in the final. We put Dallas in the final.
Can't be all right.
So, like, 50%, not bad.
I mean,
the way I've seen it is this. Like, you can now look back and say that the construction of the team was great because they finally figured out the right formula. It wasn't to go get guys like Justin Williams and be like, you're Mr. Game 7, scoring a Game 7. And he's like, whoops, couldn't score in a Game 7. what they did was they bought in a bunch of guys that were going to create competition from the AHL team. They bought in a couple guys from outside the organization that were super hungry to prove themselves, like Devontae Smith-Pelly. And more importantly, they bought in a bunch of guys who had no fucking thing to do with any of these previous playoff losses.
Yeah, it was funny like hearing like Kuznetsov like give speeches. He was like, yeah, this is great. I know that there's some other guys here that have been here longer, and it's probably more for them, but I wasn't there. Like, it seemed like every guy wanted to be like, that wasn't me, though.
Right. But to speak to both your points, like, for the first time ever, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Holtby, and Kuznetsov all had the great playoff at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's never, like, Ovechkin's been the constant.
Holtby's had better playoffs.
He might have been, but like for two rounds, not fucking like shutouts in six and seven.
But he never, whenever he had his great postseasons that ended after two rounds, there was always like that stretch of games where he was dog shit.
He was very close to being Nabokov, like a guy who would put up really good numbers and then have that one game or two where he shits the bed and that costs you the series.
Not even really shits the bed, but like game five against the Rangers that year, they were 80 seconds away.
Shits the bed is more like Flurry. Circa 2010.
He shit the bed a little bit against the Penguins just enough.
It's not just the bed.
A little
give
tiny.
That one goal. That 3-2 loss with the one goal.
An underwear stain, not a log in the on the bed.
Not a full log.
No.
In the bed.
A little, you gotta change the underwear though.
So just I think a little streak, should have gotten up there a little bit better kind of problem, and it's white sheets.
This is the analysis you get here on Puck.
So I think a big moment for that. What was it, game 3 where he botches the puck handle behind the net?
This was against Vegas?
Against Vegas, yeah. I think that was a big moment that they didn't crumble after that.
Right.
Yeah, it was 3-1 at that point, right? Or it was 2-1 at that point?
I think it was 2-0, and that became 2-1. Yeah. And
that tracks back to Pittsburgh. The minute they beat Pittsburgh, they realized everything was on the table and that everything could be okay.
Yeah.
That it's not going to be the same shit over and over again. Now they've broke out of the fucking Matrix. We were talking about that before. Like,
is the Matrix on cable?
No, I just had it in my head for some reason. Although I think Reloaded was on the other night, which is great because the Merovingian makes that girl have an orgasm in the restaurant with his mind. Remember that scene?
Oh, with the cake or whatever?
With she's eating the cake, yeah. The cum cake, I guess. So what were we talking about? Oh, that's right, the cup.
The Matrix.
So, that play was one in which they didn't crumble. There was a number of different times where adversity hit and they didn't crumble. Fucking a game 7 against the Lightning, they didn't crumble.
I don't know if you felt this way in game 3. There were a couple moments I felt where the crowd started to get that, like, DC clenched asshole kind of. And then someone would come in with a chant and they would drown it out.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen that before. Usually that festers and usually that, like, I mean... Trotz talked openly about that. Like, that shit trickles onto the bench. Like, they know.
Oh, God, yeah. But sometimes their play is what makes the crowd
100%.
Do that.
Yeah.
Chicken and egg. There was not, I don't know about you, but, like, there was not a moment in the final where I felt like they were going to lose because there was this sort of energy around the team and this energy back in D.C. that was sort of like, this is it. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. There was a certain inevitability to it, which is weird because it's not as if the other team could wasn't the team of Destiny. Like, they're a fucking expansion team.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And like, yet the Capitals, at no point did they feel like that was not their cup.
You know what it felt like? It felt like when the Red Sox came back to beat the Yankees down 3-0, and then mm-hmm. they got to the World Series. It's one more round they had to win only, but then they just tore through the Cardinals. And right. since then, the Red Sox have no longer been that shitty, cursed team. They've been one of the best teams in baseball.
The Golden Knights were Finland in 1980. They were like the inevitable next step that you had to get through in order to just, you know... I guess the Penguins Russia, I suppose.
Boy, did Washington make them look real ordinary.
I know.
They really did.
After that first game, it was just
even that was, a little bit fluky.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen with Vegas? Like, you covered them throughout the year. Do you think that they're going to do some wacky shit like Carlson and stuff like that?
That'd be so fun. Like, why not? Like, you have so much cap space.
They do.
They have just oodles of cap space.
They've got some prospects too. Like, they don't want to give up Glass for Carlson. I think that's probably a wise decision. But
so I think the long term game plan for them has to be like, you got to bump guys down. The roles that they were in right now are not the roles that they should be fulfilling if you're going to sustain this.
That's a good point.
I don't think.
Like, Perron is not a
like Hall is probably
line
not
guy.
Your second line center, but Hall is probably a very serviceable bottom six center.
See, when you said that, I thought about the idea that, like, your top line next year is like Tavares, JVR, and then the Marchessault line is your second line. But that then becomes a question of, this was a great team because they were all pulling on the rope and they were all like, we're the fucking golden misfits. We're working together to prove the whole world wrong. And then your owner's like, here's money for John Tavares. Here's some money for Kovalchuk. Oh, by the way, John of Marchessault, you're now a second line center. He's like, what? No, I built this fucking town. He says, like, Bugsy.
It's like when the Cleveland Indians signed Jack Parkman. And it completely ruined the thing that Ricky Vaughn and Roger Dorn all had.
I was wondering about that. Is that a Major League 2 reference?
Jack Parkman.
That's a Major League 2 reference.
He does the shimmy and the ladies love it.
I wish you could see Lozo's batting stance right now.
Yeah. Is that who played him? Was that Keith David? Who? No.
It was either Keith David or David Keith.
It's David Keith. One of those. Keith David's from They Live, where he had the fight with Roddy Piper.
He's the Men at Work guy with the French fries. Yeah.
So, but that was Major League 2.
That was Major League 2, and Roger Dorn owned the team and wanted to throw money now after this, you know, Cinderella team made the run. I think it's a very applicable metaphor 30 years
later. You know, they really should have known something was afoot when it was Omar Epps instead of Wesley Snipes.
Hey, Omar Epps did what he could. He was like Corey Schneider filling
in for Marty
Brodeur.
He got that juice, Omar Epps. Remember Juice? Tupac Shakur?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very highly stolen VHS when I worked at Blockbuster.
See, I liked him more in the program. He was the kid in the program that always fumbled, so they made him carry the ball around campus. You weren't born yet. It was like 88.
Wait, what was the number one most stolen movie at Blockbuster?
Oh, that's easy. Anything with Master P in it.
That's gotta be the answer.
Yeah, we couldn't keep American Pie on the shelves. No. When I worked at Blockbuster, I worked in Berwyn Heights, Greenbelt. Right. When I went to Maryland, and we had to put all the Kung Fu movies and anything with Master P behind the counter because it would get stolen the minute we put it on the floor.
I still think you're going to say it when you say Master P.
I know. It's still an epic fake out. Yeah.
And it would be amazing because, like, Blockbuster at the time definitely catered towards the communities they were in, right? So, like, someone would come in and be like, hey, do you have a copy of Deep Impact, you know, the comic movie? Mm-hmm. And then we'd be like, well, we have, like, two copies of it. And then someone would come in and be like, do you have a copy of The Players Club with Bill Bellamy? And we're like, we have 300 copies of it on the back wall. It's very easy. It's under P, but not T. And so it was very interesting to work there. It's a really interesting place to work.
How much candy would you steal?
I didn't steal any candy, but I think I've talked about it before. Like, people, to get out of their late fees, people would bring back quote-unquote damaged tapes. And we all knew it was horseshit because you could always tell. It's like, oh, yeah, I know I owe $200 on this copy of whatever the fuck, but, like, it's totally damaged. And we tried to watch it, like, for 2 weeks. We couldn't get it to work. There'd be a box in the back of these damaged tapes. So we would just steal them because they were going to be trash anyway, right? So there'd be a Saturday back at the dorm where I would be like, oh, let's test this one, and inevitably they would all work. I think that's how our double feature of Jingle All the Way and the Brendan Fraser Tarzan happened one Saturday at my dorm.
That and drugs, right? Because I'm assuming they used to throw these.
There was a lot of booze. Involved. That was the night my roommate threw up in the elevator at one of the dorms, which was a really bad scene. And it was a very memorable. I'm sorry if anybody's eating. It's a very memorable vomit because it was. was a thing where we had been drinking all night. We were in the elevator. We were heading down, probably a dining hall or some shit. And somebody said something funny in the elevator. And my roommate at the time, Kevin, just goes and just projectiles on the like buttons.
Greg actually threw up a little.
Yeah,
it was right, just right on the.
No,
floor
I was
studio.
Laughing too hard to throw up. It was the best.
To tie it back, I ended up having to get Ovechkin when they went to the Nats game when he threw out the first pitch. Mm. So I got him like they had like a little private suite. So we ended up talking in some like I don't know windowless break room, but I just kind of hung out there and you know said hi to people as they came in and out. I don't think people were going to the bathroom to piss all that frequently, but they were going very frequently. I did see one staffer come up with a little bit of puke on his shoe.
Well, you have to. You can't go that hard for that long without having
saying,
to
yeah.
like, reboot the system a couple times.
Reboot, as it were.
Boot. Reboot. By the way, speaking of pooping, tell the Jimmy Howard poop story.
Oh,
the Jimmy Howard poop story. Those all lumped together in the one poop story, right?
But it was Jimmy Howard was the one that started the whole your like trek down the trail of poop of players that had
the brown.
I don't remember. Can you tell me? Can you refresh me?
Was it Chris Osgood? Was it Jimmy Howard?
There was a lot of people in that. I started that story honestly. I started that story with Holpe and Spaghetti, and how he doesn't eat meat sauce on the road.
Yeah, because
he doesn't trust the hotel.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't a story. Maybe it was just like a quote from him and you posted it.
I'm sure it was in that story.
This was a story about poop.
This was like a couple of years ago.
This is a story about what happens when goalies have to poop during a game. Because with the argument being that no player in sports has to wear more equipment and be on the field of play for you know a longer percentage other than like soccer players, basically.
What was your favorite? Because you're infamous for approaching stories from a really unique and
poopy
interesting
angle?
Perspective. Yeah. No, I mean, what was your favorite?
That one was
like,
really good.
Pruitt idea that became a great story.
That one probably.
Yeah,
that's probably it.
That was the one
on my tombstone.
Like, how does it start? Like, does your editor go, "Hey, when do hockey players shit?" And you're just like, "Good question." Or you just one day were you just like,
"No, it started because inevitably, like a goalie leaves a game right for fix some skate issue, and then Twitter's goes to. He's pooping. First thing is he's pooping.
Gotta
he has
pooping.
To go poop. So I just started asking around and, hey, can I, yeah, just want to ask you something really weird. So I had developed this long pitch where I would do what I just told you guys about, you know, there's no position that it wears more equipment and no position that has to be on the field for longer. And naturally, no position is as harder to take a shit than a goalie. Which, I don't know, produced some... I think that's the one that probably people will remember.
Was there any goalie who was like, dead. Like, dude, I just won my 400th career game. You're asking me about taking a shit. Was there anyone who was like, can you just maybe not ask
I usually... I got a really good response from that, I think. Because I think it's something that they've at least at one point in their careers have worried about.
Goalies love when you talk about the struggle of their position. Like how unfair it is they get bumped or how much shit they have to wear. Like being like, yeah, you know, everybody else can go off the ice and take a shit. We can't. Like they would love to talk about that.
I really tapped into something deep seated.
Totally.
But like nobody can just go take a dump. You still have you're going to have a shift in like 90 seconds. You got to like basically time your shift so it's like the last shift and then like there's two more shifts and a TV timeout. Then you can go take a dump. It's impossible
or,
to take a dump.
Or why do you think so many matching minors happen in the last 2 minutes of the first like second period?
Hey, buddy. Right? Dude.
Come on,
let's
you
go.
Know it.
Just,
I think about that every time two guys, because they don't have to go to the box.
Yeah.
They just go to the back. I always think about that. I always think, like, hit me with your stick. Why?
So
I got to take a shit.
Should there be a toilet in the penalty box?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Should there be, like, one of those, like, recliner, like, the Homer Simpson recliner toilet kind of situation?
So now you had me thinking about, like, if there was a toilet in the penalty box, that means there need to be, like, you know, he goes in the penalty box. He's like, hey, buddy, hit the button. The box attendant hits the button.
Yeah.
These, like, curtains go...
Yeah, it's like the limo or something. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no, we're watching this. Are you kidding me?
No. It's the curtains go up. Then that little triangle piece from Fortnite goes on top of the penalty box.
Oh, boy.
To be the roof. And then,
it's like the concussion bubble.
Then you can go in there in peace and quiet. Yeah. Although then you'll have guys faking it to not have the fans give him shit while he...
Right. So we open... if you got to poop... I mean, I'm not saying we got to see, like, junk and shit.
Well, you're really taking the nth degree.
They lay a towel over your lap.
Yeah, they show pooping all the time in movies. You don't got to see, you know, stuff. It's just like someone's pooping.
It'll be a bidet, so you don't have to wipe.
Like the scene in The Nice Guys when Ryan Gosling's pooping and the other guy comes out.
Russell Crowe knocks down the door to talk to him.
You don't see Ryan Gosling's dick and balls. I'm just saying, it's for the comedy of it. You got to see someone just like... like looking at the clock because they only have 14 seconds to finish pooping.
So oh, who would be on. The funniest player to
that
see in there?
Hell,
be awesome.
Funniest player to poop in the penalty box?
Yeah.
Let's see here. I mean, obviously Lucic, like a bigger guy, would be.
I was gonna say
epic.
Chara. I was gonna say Chara. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really good. Yeah. Would Johnny Gaudreau be at risk to falling?
His legs are just like, I can't
yeah,
reach
he's
the
just
floor.
Like saying, yeah.
It's like seeing a chihuahua, you know, hold up and squat on the sidewalk. It'd be like shaky legged kind of thing, probably. Pruitt, how did you get into writing while we have some time left to talk about so this career?
I was on the toilet one day.
How did you get into writing?
There was one summer, I think I was 15 or 16, where I was just sitting around doing nothing.
You got into writing 3 years ago?
But I'm bummed.
Ah, there it is.
Yes.
And my mom told me to get off my ass and go do something. And she suggested going, like, walking into the local Falls Church News Press, which is like this weekly kind of tabloid style in my hometown, and asking just if I could do anything. So I think the first thing I wrote for them was like some agate about like community events. And then I did like a restaurant review of a Thai restaurant. And then I just started covering like high school sports.
Right.
Kind of similar to what you did in that Northern Virginia area.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just covering like my classmates, which was kind of weird. So I was like, I just think there was one game where I painted my face and my chest for a soccer match, for like one of our girls' soccer games. And then went and interviewed the coach afterwards, and she was like, "What the hell are you doing?" I was like, "Sorry, I was like cheering for y'all, but what'd you think of that strike in the second God. Half there?"
Now that is what's missing at press conferences after games, because
right.
they always pant like at the NBA final, they always pant. It's like some guy wearing like a LeBron mask or something.
You're like, "Hey man, no cheering in the press box." You'd be like, "I wasn't cheering.
I have a question. Painted. It's a big foam finger."
Question for LeBron: throws the powder in the air.
How did you make it to the post?
I was all set after college to go intern at the Dallas Morning News covering high schools. Which
wow.
I, which
like
I did.
Like football?
Yeah,
shit?
Yeah. It was a so fall, it was a like fall a internship beat. To do Friday, well,
where'd you grow
Friday
up?
Night Lights. Northern Virginia. I grew up there.
Oh,
it was honestly, it was like I had nothing planned. I didn't have any jobs lined up. I had an internship lined up and I really didn't want to go do it. I had a girlfriend who lived back on the East Coast at that time and I was just not honestly trying to move that far and just kind of set up by myself. And luckily, a Maryland beat opened up at the Post, and I was still interning at the Globe at that time up in Boston, which I went to college. Honestly, right timing.
And you knew Wilder up there?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I moved into a house in D.C. on Craigslist, and she was one of the four
That's
roommates.
Right. You knew her there. Okay. Yeah, I remember her mentioning that, I think, when we
I don't remember that at all. Wow, good memory.
Yeah, I noticed on the Craigslist ad, one was like, you know, a sports writer in her 20s. I was like, okay, I probably know this person. Lo and behold, it's someone I know, or someone whose circles I ran in, yeah.
I'm sorry,
and now we're colleagues.
SI is Charlotte Wilder.
SI is Charlotte Wilder.
And now you're both at SI.
Yeah, I know.
Who were the other people in the house, like Michael Farber, and like, who else was living in the Craigslist house? Like Farber and like Rick Riley?
Richard Deitch.
Do you...
I'll have a little round table tonight, roommates.
Oh, man. It must be so tough because every time you turn on the TV, it's fucking Paw Patrol.
the Bubble Guppies. The first time I moved in, though, a lot of like local sports, DC sports writers like Andrew Sharp, Bill Barnwell, a couple of people I had read but never met were all at my house. And I was like trying to build my IKEA bed upstairs.
How did you? I mean, the legacy of Caps writers at the Post is a really interesting legacy.
Yeah.
It's like you and Tarek Al-Bashir is now a major like. Everybody takes pictures with him. TV celebrity in DC covering the Caps.
Yeah,
Rachel Nichols.
Yeah, right.
Jason Lockenfora, who's like
Mike
NFL
Wilbon. Mike Wilbon's a big Caps guy. He's
Caps,
a really good Caps reporter, writer. No?
Yeah, no. Isabel's like, she can do whatever she wants. She could be the Moscow correspondent.
She's going to be like.
And she did.
Yeah, she was there for a little bit. She's awesome.
Oh, is she going to go with the cup to back to Russia?
You know it.
When Ovechkin takes it there and doesn't bring it back?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Boy, that's going to be
I mean, she's of Ukrainian descent, so she knows Russian. And man, if I...
Oh, she knows Russian?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. I think that's such an advantage. Like, if I could learn Russian... Because I don't know about you, I think that's the hardest culture to crack as far as interviews and to, like, to understand. Yeah. It's just so...
If I could go back and learn anything, it'd be Russian. Because like, I feel like those guys are billions percent more candid in their native tongue.
Yeah.
Also, I'd be a woman because they're also billions percent more candid when talking Russian with a woman. I've noticed, like those Ovechkin, remember those Ovechkin interviews he used to do on TV in Russia, where like the Russian network, because they're smart, would put the foxiest like Russian woman they could possibly find. I was just using foxy. I don't know why. And like he'd sit down and like I'd interview Ovi. It's like, oh, you know, hope we do better this year. And then he's sitting down with this woman on Russian television, just like, vodka, you know, but so I give out phone number for babes and babes and shit.
Yeah, that's the phone
best
number thing.
Shit.
Vodka and babes.
Dude, at the rally, I said it on, like it was a Bowie-esque turn of phrase. He's just like he's.
Oh yeah,
like,
you were really transfixed by the whole babe.
I was. I was transfixed by, you know, what was the line he gave Izzy? The we're not gonna be fucking suck. And then he goes, boys and girls and babes, let's go. Like, wow. It's like Ziggy Stardust level turn of phrase.
Did you
right
like
there.
That better than Kuznetsov's "We're gonna fuck this shit"?
We're gonna fuck this shit, and then like
that guy curses more than we do on the
he
podcast.
Curses a lot.
He curses
and,
a lot.
And then the beautiful thing was like Holtby gets up there, and it's exactly what you'd want it to be. It's just some like
I didn't
probably
see
stoner
just
who gets up
Jack
there.
Johnson,
I was gonna say yeah, like
guitar,
he's just like hey
and
kids,
he's like hey, hey man, I don't remember a lot of things to say like you know koozies or whatever. let's talk about the White House thing real quick because like. It's pretty clear to me that the two guys you identify in that team that probably don't want to go are Holtby and Smith-Pelly, assuming Smith-Pelly is going to be back. Do you get a sense? Yeah. I mean, in covering the team, I've heard that, like, Trotz is a Trump guy. I've heard... I do believe
he voted for him.
Yeah, the Russians obviously don't give a shit. They want to go.
McClellan is not.
Everybody loves
McClellan's
milkshake
not a
team.
Trump guy.
Not at all.
Interesting. No. So I heard Orpik's not a Trump guy. Devontae obviously is not a Trump guy. And Holtby doesn't seem like he's too keen on them going. But I think
Holtby's him and his wife are very vocal in the LGBTQ community.
Yeah,
they march to Pride every year, so it would stand to reason. I don't know for sure.
Do you think they're going to get any blowback for going? I mean, it doesn't seem like they. It doesn't feel the same way as the Penguins, and I think it's because when the Penguins decided to go, it was right in the midst of the anthem shit. Where like it was within
where,
the same week, I think,
sports
of Trump
being used as political. Colors.
Yeah, it was in the same week of Trump basically tweeting about you know those sons of bitches who don't kneel or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, which I don't think it should matter when it happens. You know, I still think they should get criticized for it. I don't know if they will though, especially within the city. Everyone said no one cares what they do.
Yeah,
I don't think for the rest of the time. But man, how fascinating is that though? That like. Just the Russian-U.S. relations, the way they are in that city right now, and the way they are in this country, and then
the most prominent Russian athlete.
No matter where you fall, like you have to admit that that's like kind of crazy that a guy who literally during the season started a social movement, quote unquote social movement, to promote the president, quote unquote president's reelection.
Yeah,
quote unquote reelection.
Do you feel like he's gotten like Slava Malamud, obviously, who did make me laugh this week when he said that he was surprised to hear that Ovechkin was going to have a child because the Stanley Cup wasn't showing. He's a guy who's been very vocal about Ovechkin getting a pass for the Putin stuff. Do you think he's gotten a pass for the Putin stuff? Because where I'm sitting, it's like it's hard to go after the guy when the guy is not going to be an active participant in the debate. And he's not.
He's not. In a way, he's not been active, but like by putting that on social media, by wearing a, you know, Save Children from Fascism shirt a couple years ago, you are inserting yourself into the discussion. I don't really buy his explanation of, you know, I'm not a political guy. You know, I'm not trying to engage in politics. I'm just trying to support. Well, okay, you're trying to support a politician. Like, you're putting that out there. The other thing is, you know, yeah, you're right to a certain extent that he's not going to engage with us in
no.
it. So then what is our responsibility as journalists to continue pressing that issue, continue bringing it up? You know, for instance, we wrote our Stanley Cup cover story. That was something I weighed. You know, how much do I bring that up? Do I just kind of mention it as an aside? It's an issue that should be treated with gravity, but there's also a lot more pertinent stuff as far as the Stanley Cup goes, as far as hockey goes.
Yeah.
That thing didn't really weigh at all on them winning.
No.
Now in the aftermath, I think it might weigh heavily. I mean,
the first time he takes a picture with Putin in the cup.
Yeah. Or the first time he takes a picture with Trump in the cup.
Yeah.
That to me makes it feel different than the Crosby, Sullivan, you know, Pittsburgh, that whole visit.
Yeah.
Is because there's a very clear link there.
and he's been very he's played the card of being like, I'm just an athlete, and and you know, if you press him on Crimea or something, he's just going to play that card and be like, I'm supporting my president because I'm Russia.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to it. And so it's really hard to, like I said, it's really hard to kind of press him on things when he's going to play when he's going to be daft about it.
Yeah, and again, this is a situation where I wish I knew way more about Russian culture and Russian politics and, you know, just Russian people in general, because a lot of it's me projecting, and I'm sure it's a really tough position. Like, he's got to be the second most famous person in Russia, right, behind Putin, I would probably wager. Definitely top five.
Yeah.
And so to not only be playing in the U.S., but be playing in the nation's capital, and then to be, I assume, pressured, you know, to publicly support this guy. Like, what kind of position does it put him in?
I think he likes him, though. Like, I know people have been in the past of being like, well, what do you expect a Russian to say? I'm like, well, I think he kind of digs the fact the president's a hockey guy and, like, treats Ovechkin with the import that he does.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but...
Nah.
You know what's going to be the bad thing that happens? Here's my prediction. Smith-Pelly's not going to the White House. You already said it, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's an RFA.
He is an RFA, yeah.
What's going to happen is the Capitals are not going to re-sign him. To avoid, I'm serious. Like, I could see it happening, man.
Where you think they don't re-sign him to avoid the?
They'll make up some cap reason. They'll trade him for some other RFA. That's and they just won't. You're telling me you can't see them doing that just to avoid that issue.
The only thing I think is
not gonna trade Holpe.
Specious about that is that he is legit a playoff hero.
Yeah, but he's also a guy that had 7 goals in the regular. They could sell it as a hockey move. I could so see them.
They could sell
I
it
really
as a
hope
hockey.
He stays because I think he's could be really important to that city, to an underdeveloped hockey community.
Among, yeah, the undefeated. Right. Right.
Yeah, Clinton wrote a great story.
Wrote a really
about
good story on that about why he's important.
Yeah, but
I mean, massive showing. I think is one of his autograph signs the other day. Like, I think he's very important to that city, and speaking up on that side on those issues too. So. I hope he stays, but I hear what you're saying.
That's
like, it wouldn't surprise me in the hockey world, right?
Like that story, you saw the Nick Boynton thing, right, yesterday?
Yeah.
He talked about how he went to the team and said he had head issues, and then they were like, all right.
They traded him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the Boynton thing was interesting because it was one of the – it was really, really good, and it was one of the more – this is in the Players Tribune if you haven't read it. It was one of the more balanced ones I've read because he got into the fact that it was sort of hockey culture that kept him fighting. And then he also said, but also, like, I was getting drugs from my trainers whenever I needed it, and then my team traded me when I was... So it was one of the few ones that kind of took... I always feel like personal responsibility is absent in a lot of these recollections of careers and concussions and things like that. And I felt like he took enough of it where the other stuff felt balanced, and it wasn't just sort of like, woe is me, which is, I think, how some of these things can read. Because I still feel like... There is a contract that these guys entered into knowing that there was going to be some health issues with the path they chose to remain in professional sports. That said, the league could definitely take better care of them once they leave or later on in their careers and they need the help.
Or lie to them about their situations.
Or trade them when they speak up and go to rehab, which is what happened to him.
Or not follow proper protocol.
Yeah.
Yeah, ignore the protocol like the Devils did that one preseason.
Yeah.
Where do you think this, as we have gone into the very serious territory at the end of the interview.
Let's go back to poop.
Where do you think the concussion lawsuit's going to end up? Like, do you think that NHL's in trouble, or do you think that there isn't enough smoking guns there where they're going to be in trouble?
My question is, are they going to settle? Right, because like that's how the NFL got out of it was they settled and they created some fund that they haven't followed through on or whatever. But they essentially got out of it by saying we admit culpability, we'll give you a modest amount, we'll set up these things, whatever. Gary Bettman's not really a guy who settles.
No,
he's a lawyer who likes to win and who has done a heck of a lot of winning when he gets in an argument or gets in a courtroom like this. So
I think when you dig your heels on CTE like that, you're indicating that you're not looking.
And that's every statement he says is just dripping with lawyerese, and he's just allowing himself some sort of plausible deniability. It's not 100% proven. Okay, well, like very little of science is 100% proven. That's not what the whole point is. We get to a degree of beyond a degree of reasonable doubt, and I think we're getting close to that. I don't know if we're there yet, but. Isn't it reasonable to at least start taking measures to protect your players, to give them health care after? And that's what I would like to see, with just some sort of admittance that we are employing these people to do some pretty barbaric shit at times, and it can result in some pretty horrific long lasting injuries. So let's work together on this. Let's set up a fund and help them. But whether we're headed in that direction, I don't know. I'm really curious to see what happens if they were actually going to court on this. I mean, it seems like we're kind of barreling towards that. I think the judge still has to rule on the class action suit at this
point.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm hoping it does because that means more discovery.
I want to see more
Colin Campbell emails.
Talking Rick Westhead's about doing work, isn't he?
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show, man. The fucking idea that like if this sport was worth a damn in the mainstream, the idea that one guy wrote to another guy and been like, you know what, we need our referees to stop calling so many major penalties because the media notices them more.
It's insane.
For God's sakes.
Like, I feel like there's like been like 11 smoking guns. Maybe not smoking guns, like 10 smoking knives that turn into a big gun. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's enough smoke on these weapons.
So it's like when the Nazi made the knife hot in Raiders and threatened Karen Allen with it, basically that.
Yeah. It's like you douse the knife in gasoline, you light it, and there's smoke coming off the knife. And you're like, well, that's not a smoking gun. But like, what if I pile these all together? It's like, oh, yeah, that's
a smoking knife pile.
That's a smoking knife pile. That's just as bad.
I think that it's the same deal as the NFL. But I think the NHL has been negligent in a lot of things. And maybe that all, like you said, maybe the totality of their negligence, in fact, adds up to them being liable. But I think at the end of the day, like my support for the lawsuit is my support of creating more awareness for taking care of these guys after it's done. Because it's not as if the league doesn't have the money to do it.
Right. They brag about their money all the time.
Yeah. So it's like I feel like if the lawsuit exists for that end, great. Just have a problem with a guy who literally played one game in the NHL, put his name to a civil suit, and being like, "Yeah, I was lied to." I mean, you got concussions, when your concussions occurred in junior in the AHL, and you're like, "The NHL is liable for this for me." I'm like, "Is it though?"
What do you think Gary Bettman's poop is like? Well, let's close on something a little lighter. Alex, you're a poop expert. How often do you think he poops at the NHL offices? I'm going to say never.
Do you think he has he probably has his own bathroom?
Yeah, right? I think so. I think
he has no secret. He's not just going like picking up an InStyle and like going to the stall.
Walking in, hey, Bill.
Laying the
seat. Oh, what you doing here, man? Whew, this is terrible.
150% to use a Mike Hoffman number.
boy, have you guys gotten into that?
We did.
You did? Okay, good.
Don't worry about it. You're free. Yeah. Cool. Do you have anything to say about it?
No, that is wild. What stood out to me was, I think Pete Blackburn tweeted out the number of women who are married to either current or former senators players.
Yeah, they're all like,
who are all like, yep, not yep, totally,
yeah, absolutely,
probably should have come out sooner.
Never seen that before, but a telltale sign.
Yeah.
To answer your question, Gary Bettman 150% uses his bathroom time and his private bathroom off his office, which I assume is the case, as his alone time. So, you know, when Colin Campbell comes bursting in his office. Gary, we need to stop calling so many major penalties. The media's noticing. Then Bettman's just like, he has those headphones that have like this on this microphone. It's like a piece of metal and then this poofiness, you know, like old school Walkman headphones.
Yeah, old school Walkman
headphones. And he's listening to Steve Miller Band on the can and no one's bothering him.
Just like bobbing his head, splash,
that's
bobbing
right.
his head, splash. Like,
some people call me the space cowboy. Splash.
Oh my goodness,
Alex Pruitt, where can people read your genius?
Don't read it. It's fine.
SI.com.
Yeah, SI.com.
Commemorative Capitals issue.
Yeah, available at all Barnes and Nobles.
Capitals
Barnes and Noble.
Is your story on the series is in all of the Sports Illustrated's, but it's different covers.
Yeah, we did three covers. One's on just I think. There's my understanding is like there are five regions. Two went to the Warriors, one went to Justify, and two went to the Caps. So East Coast.
So Washington and Pittsburgh.
Beat the horse, though. That's good.
Yeah.
Beat that horse.
Yeah.
2-1. And then you're on Twitter at
Alex_Pruitt.
Well, Alex, I'm glad we could continue our hero's journey from comedy to tragedy on this interview.
From concussions to poop. From poop to cups. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, guys.
Our thanks to Alex Pruitt. Alex Pruitt!
Good poop stories. Good ovechkin stories.
Yeah, he didn't really know what the fuck you were talking about with that poop story.
I can't believe like he doesn't immediately know the Jimmy Howard. Because I associate him the most with the poop story.
He's a guy who is a really good writer, so when he writes something, it's completely out of his head afterwards, probably. Opposed to you and I, who stress over the things that we write for weeks and weeks and weeks afterwards.
I don't know about that.
No, I completely forget the shit I write. One of the hardest things when I was writing Puck Daddy was like, I wrote so much, people would come up to me like, hey man, great article on blah blah blah. I'm like, I don't remember writing blah blah
that's
blah.
Me at the podcast, like if somebody points out something I've written in like the last year, most times I'm like right there, but like literally 4 hours after we come out of here, I don't I have literally, what do we talk to Pruitt about again?
My single, Pruitt writes great stuff. My single least favorite piece of hockey writing maybe in recent memory was Mark Spector's column defending the virtue of Alex Ovechkin against nobody.
Two people?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the thing, too. The reason I hated it is that, and Spector and I have had issues before about this, he's very protectionist of his peers.
Mm.
And if you're going to write a story that defends Ovechkin's behavior against this monsoon of criticism that you believe he's receiving, mm-hmm. don't you have to show your work? Don't you have to cite the people that are criticizing him?
Oh, he didn't do that.
No, that was my problem with the column. Like, he does this whole, get off of Ovi's back. But, like, who's criticizing him? Every single fan I've seen is like, this is fucking great. He's earned it. It's an outpouring of joy. It's catharsis, embodiment of catharsis. And, like, no one's had a problem with anything Ovechkin's done. We want to see more of it, frankly. The three people that gave him shit were ESPN's own Keith Olbermann.
It's an expansion team.
I was a good Olbermann, man. You've been hiding
that shit. I just pulled that out real quick.
How dare you, sir?
Sir, Keith Olbermann says it was an expansion team. Nah, I lost it.
Larry Brooks, who wrote a whole story about how Ovechkin's cup doesn't erase his previous playoff failures, which is... I'm sorry. How rude of me. Hall of Fame writer Larry Brooks, who says that Ovechkin's cup win doesn't... erases previous.
The
writer that we as an organization, the Professional Hockey Writers Association, put up on a pedestal and said, this is the best of us.
Yes.
Please give him the Elmer Ferguson Award, for he is the best of us. And I have no problem with that, because now I know that with all of the bullshit that I've written, all I have to do is just stick it out.
That's how you get into the Hall of Fame anyway.
Yep.
Like, you just write in this business for a really long
time. I have written so much fucking garbage, just like Larry Brooks,
right,
that if I can maintain employment to be his age, whatever it is, that I know that I will be in the Hall of Fame one day. If Larry Brooks can get there, that means that I have a clear path.
Mm-hmm. He compared him to A-Rod, who actually was bad in many, many postseasons before 09 when he won it with the Yankees. Like, he wasn't Ovechkin, where he was hitting monstrous home runs in Game 7s of playoff series and the rest of the team wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
A-Rod was the reason
they
team
lost.
Was losing.
Ovechkin, you can say a lot about Ovechkin, but you show me the series he lost.
I went back through when I wrote something about him where, like, you can have, like, a good, like, say you play two rounds and you have 14 games, you might have 12 points, but, like, you might have 3-6 in that one series you lose. But, like, that was pretty much the extent of it.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he'd have, like, a so-so series, but it's everyone has those.
The criticisms that you can give him, we talked about this before, but again, like, Game 7's maybe not his bag. And,
yeah, not recently, though.
And the thing about him was that, like, I feel like in this postseason run, he had more impact in maybe some key moments than he had previously. But that's not for a lack of trying. That's simply just, like, the things you do happen to, in hindsight, be really important. You know, scoring the first goal in a Game 7 against Tampa, for example. Like, that kind of moment.
I go back to the whole Joe Thornton's bad playoff numbers thing, where you're a playmaker, and if you make a play and then the person on the other end of the play doesn't make the play, you don't get the points you usually get in the regular season. So you look at Nick Backstrom, who's you know, on the power play with Ovechkin all the time, on the same line with him for a lot of years. If Backstrom's playing poorly, then you're gonna play poorly.
And
it's
Backstrom,
all connected.
Backstrom had some bad postseasons,
right? And this postseason, Nick Backstrom was fucking saucering pucks to TJ Oshie, fucking feathering pucks to Ovechkin
with like three bones in his hand that were healthy. Yeah,
three fucking bones. There's like a stick 4 inches away. He's just hitting a 2.5-inch window. Oshie's ripping it top corner, because you tee a guy up, maybe he misses the net, and your sweet little saucer pass gets forgotten. Like, this year, everything came together. This is how cups have been won forever. You need everybody. Yeah. You need seven Devontae Smith Pelly goals. You need overtime winners from Lars Eller where it bounces off his dick and balls or whatever, and it just goes in. Like, you need that magic.
And then Damian Cox said that Rafael Nadal didn't celebrate like Ovechkin did because he's a true champion.
He won 11!
I was going to say, like, there's absolutely nothing more
of course he's bored of it.
Pathetic than an act like you've been there accusation to the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin, who, by the way, for the record, had never been to the fucking conference final, let alone the Stanley Cup final.
Alex Ovechkin had never experienced the fourth round of a playoff series. And
he had never experienced the third round.
Oh, yeah, the third round.
Like, when he had sex with the Prince of Wales trophy and Cox was like, act like you've been there. He's never been there!
Like, it's okay to act like you've never been there if you've never been there.
Yes. It's also okay. The Spectre column was dumb because he didn't cite his work. He didn't mention there's like three people in humanity that have a problem with this right now. I am so happy and impressed with the hockey community because we all recognize this. It's like when everybody recognizes it was like how everybody looked at the This Is America video at the same time. They were like, wow, this is really good. This is art. Everybody looked at the Ovechkin thing and said, wow, this is really good. This is art. You know, nobody had a problem with him drinking. Nobody had a problem with the snow angels in the fountain. Nobody had a problem with him parading the cup through. Normally when the cup is making public appearances, it's because somebody scheduled it. It's right. Like, you know, we set it up to come to this bar. Alex Ovechkin was parading the cup through the streets of Georgetown impromptu. Mm-hmm. Like it was a flash mob. And it was the greatest thing ever because it was like the moment where you realized that this community and this team have been going through this shit together for the last 10, 12 years. And they realized it and the city realized it. And there was nothing... I hope that does start a thing where, like, if the Predators win the cup, like, they're taking the cup down Broadway and or I guess it's Broadway, right? I think in Nashville.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's a Saturday night and they've got the cup and they're just raising it above their heads and it's like everybody trying to touch Christ. You know, that's what I want to see from teams now going forward is this connection with their community that says we're in this together.
The thing you missed, though, about the This Is America metaphor is you didn't see what Larry Brooks wrote about that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
He said that it was great, but it didn't cancel out Donald Glover's final season of Community, so... You know, we can't forget about that Yahoo season that nobody watched. He just said, yeah, great. This Is America is a groundbreaking, triumphant piece of art. But I mean, really, yeah. Do we need that fifth season of Community? So it's like,
it's a really good point.
Yeah. And then when he wins the Grammys for that song, Damian Cox is going to be like, boy, act like you've won a Grammy. Well, he has won a Grammy. Actually,
Damian Cox said that, you know, Kanye just dropped a new album and he didn't have to take his shirt off on top of a truck to dance. Act like he'd been there before.
Act like you've been, man. Like I just, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I hate stuff too. I don't want to read World Cup and Olympic tweets for the next 3 weeks.
But was there anything about the Caps celebration that irked you?
No.
Like I thought it was just like beautiful. The whole thing was beautiful. Maybe I'm too close to it because like, you know, when I see this city celebrating, I know like a lot of my friends are really happy that I've known for years that have been long suffering Capitals fans, and I just feel happy for that community and. Outside of maybe like the owner, happy for that team.
Right, the owner.
Actually, I talked about that. I went up and congratulated Ted. So maybe we're all right now. I don't know.
You gave him like the bro hug, like tap on the back with.
I shook his hand. I'm just like congratulations, man. Like this is a great moment for you and the organization.
Hmm.
And he said, but your Twitter. No, he didn't say that. I don't know. I just the Spectre thing. Just like you can as a hot takeist myself. You know, if you're going to build a straw man, at least tell us where the straw came from,
mm-hmm.
You know, and to not cite something had to inspire that.
Right.
And it was definitely his peers. And he doesn't want to throw anybody under the bus because everybody in the PHWA, for the most part, is protectionist of the bad.
But
the,
why do
the,
it?
The people that said this shit are the ones that deserve calling out. Larry Brooks deserves calling out when he does dumb shit. And it's not all dumb shit. I know I give him shit on this show a lot because he's mean to me. But he can be good sometimes. Damian Cox probably hasn't been good in about 25 years.
Yeah, I don't really know anything good that Damian Cox... Damian Cox went on a bad take bender on Twitter the way Ovechkin went on a beer bender.
Oh, my God. What was the other thing he wrote? It was about...
He tweeted how he just got out... He came out of the Bruce Springsteen Broadway thing. And then his next tweet was about, hey, is anyone else going to get the cup? Because it was always Ovechkin's cup. Then it was the Nadal thing, and then there was something else.
There was something else. It was the thing about the Senators thing where on the radio he was like,
yes.
He bemoaned the existence of cyberbullying. He was like,
no,
and saying that if someone's cyberbullying you, you should really get over it or something like that.
Yeah, like whatever it was, he was dismissive of what happened, like or like it's not a big deal, like just.
It's clear. Here's my message to my brothers and sisters in sports writing. It's okay to call out the real shit. Just call out the shit. You Spectre called out the shit. He just didn't call it out. He wrote about it. He just didn't call it out, which I think is just completely disingenuous. Completely disingenuous. If it's deplorable enough, are we still allowed to use that word? If it's deplorable enough. That you're going to write about it, then tell everybody what inspired it, because it's clearly your peers that inspired it.
Yeah, like it's not people are just committed to that narrative, man. That's it.
And people are committed to protecting their friends. So yeah, Obi's great.
It's fantastic.
He's party now.
I really do hope he shows up to camp weighing like 320 though, and just can't move.
Just he's like tired because of the kid and shit. I don't even know when the kid's there.
I have not slept in three months.
Yeah.
Partly drinking, partly baby. Part of me, Vladimir Ovechkin.
There was a part of me that was wondering exactly what the Caps' motivation next year was going to be, but there was a whole lot of repeat talk at that thing. I know you think it's just lip service, but I'm like,
what else am I going to say? Fuck, if we just make the playoffs next
year. Obi's like, Sydney, I have two more.
I need to catch Gretzky. I catch Gretzky in goals. We win the cup again. Who cares? I already have a cup. Fuck you, Sydney.
But great. Now it's going to be a 95-year-old Steve Simmons at the Hall of Fame.
Steve Simmons hasn't done anything yet.
But he beat an expansion team.
I feel bad for Vegas now because they're not going to get back there for a while. Even established teams that go to the Cup final and are good have a hard time getting back, i.e. Nashville.
Yeah.
And now Vegas has to do it with – oh, boy.
All right. Before we get to the question of the week, real quick on the awards because our next show will be post-awards. Vezina Trophy, Hollebuck, Pekka Rene, and Vasilevsky.
Rene's going to win,
but it's going to be really funny.
It's going to be so sad.
Yeah. He should just actually sit there and allow UC Soros to claim it for him because he will his job next year. The Frank J. Selke Trophy, the J stands for defense. Patrice Bergeron, Sean Couturier, and Anže Kopitar.
I think it's going to be Couturier just because he had a bunch of points and goals this year. That's just how the voters go.
I think it's going to be Kopitar because he had his best offensive season, which means he'll win the defensive trophy.
I mean, Bergeron should win it, but I think Couturier is going to win it.
Norris Trophy, Drew Doughty, Victor Hedman, PK Subban. Ooh, that's a tough one. I feel like Doughty was... I mean...
I think Hedman's going to get it.
Yeah, I think Hedman will get it, too.
It's his year.
His year, and his team was really good, and he stayed healthy.
Yeah.
I'm happy PK got a nomination, though. Mr. Lindsey Vonn.
Oh, excuse me.
The Lady Bing Trophy...
Who cares?
For guys who drive their trucks into Tim Hortons.
In the words of Richard Dreyfuss and Let It Ride, who cares?
Alexander Barkov, William Karlsson, Ryan O'Reilly. William Karlsson will win because he had the most goals.
Who was the other two?
Barkov and Ryan. Noted gentleman Ryan O'Reilly.
I hope Karlsson gets it.
The Bill Masterson Trophy for having the best lifetime movie plot. Brian Boyle, Roberto Luongo, Jordan Stahl.
Oh, it's gotta be Jordan Stahl.
You think it's Boyle? Oh, shit. Sorry. Well, Stahl had a lot of shit going on in his life.
Yeah, Jordan Stahl had... That's the thing. That's why that award sucks. You're comparing, sadness
and tragedies. Yeah, exactly.
Who had the more tragic stuff that happened and then played better after it? Jesus Christ.
All right, right now, make the bet. Eric Karlsson get a nomination for the Masterton next year based on the cyberbullying thing?
I need to see... Ask me again in a week. Okay. I need more. I still need to see more stuff about that.
Calder Trophy, Matt Barzal, Brock Besser, Clayton Keller.
It's going to be Matt Barzal.
Barzal on the walk. The Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award. The mess, as it's known. Derek Engelund, Wayne Simmonds, and Blake Wheeler. Wait, what? I thought this was for captains.
Technically, Derek Engelund's not the captain, isn't he?
But he's not a captain, and neither is Wayne Simmonds. Wayne Simmonds isn't the captain of the Flyers. I don't understand what this award is anymore.
Yeah, it's always three captains, right?
Yeah, I always thought it was the best captain award. Anyway, it should go to Blake Wheeler.
I think it's going to go to Derek Engelund.
Okay. Jack Adams Award. Jared Bednar, Bruce Cassidy, and your winner, Gerard Gallant. The Ted Lindsay Award for best player is Taylor Hall, MacKinnon, and McDavid.
McDavid.
You think it's McDavid?
I think it's McDavid.
I'll go MacKinnon. Hart Trophy, Taylor Hall, Anže Kopitar, Nathan MacKinnon, Taylor Hall.
It's probably Taylor Hall.
Yeah, recency bias. The King Clancy Trophy. Who gives a shit? Sorry. I'll stop.
Wait, no, give me the King Clancy.
Okay, King Clancy is the Sedins, PK Subban, and Jason Zucker, the Sedins. General Manager of the Year, Shovel Day Off, George McPhee, Steve Yzerman, George McPhee. All right. There you go. That's all you need to know about the awards.
By the way, speaking of Let It Ride, you didn't win any money at the Belmont.
I didn't. And we'll talk about this in the show. We got there around maybe the fifth or sixth race.
Oh, really?
And then we just were making bets and trying to find places to watch races.
You just do a $20 general admission thing and just
And we figured it'd be easier to find you after the Belmont, so that's why we texted you.
So I want all my money for the day pretty much on the 10th race before the Belmont. Mm. And then after the Belmont, I thought I won on the Belmont. I thought I hit a show bet, and I'm standing in line waiting to cash out before we go to the train.
That's a show bet.
And I'm like, when play show? And I look up at the board and I'm like, whatever the order of the finish was, I'm like, wait. And I look at my tickets and I wave my friend over. I'm like, who came in third? And mm-hmm. he was like, whatever. And I look at my tickets. I'm like, oh no, we can go. So okay. I basically wasted 10 minutes in line.
We won like $45, I think, on an exacta earlier in the day, but that was the only hit I had. I would have had the trifecta in the Belmont, but true to form as a Jets fan.
No Gronk.
Gronk fucked me.
I boxed Gronk in the 9 horse to do the 6-9. The 10th, dude, the money I won on the exacta bet was murderous because I boxed 3 horses. And guess what the top 3 horses were? It was all the fucking horses I boxed in the exacta instead of the trifecta.
All right. So the question of the week this week, in what was basically a two-topic show, I think, the Senators and the Capitals.
Yeah, it's the off season. Next week at the live show is when we're going to unload on you.
I was working out at the gym. You were home, I assume, watching The Price is Right.
For what? Oh, no, I meant to tell you that. No, that was during, it was the Seinfeld, the bet episode. That's where I saw
okay,
that.
Okay, so you're watching Seinfeld. I was watching The Price is Right at the gym. We both saw the same commercial, which is a guy coming home. His jersey stinks. He's been playing hockey. He needs to have some of that Snuggle fabric softener to make his jersey smell good.
Yes. And he's also got a weird hockey stick bag thing happening.
It's like a man purse.
Yeah, like the I've definitely seen the stick bag for people that play ice or roller or whatever walking around, but I've never seen the under bag like purse thing. I don't know what the hell's going on.
It also appears as though he's a goalie because it looks like a goalie stick he's got on his. Anyways, we were fascinated by this ad because he is wearing one of the single most generic. Like if you went to the wardrobe department and said, I need a hockey jersey, this is what they would give you. It's a circle with 2 hockey sticks crossed and a puck above the sticks. So you could see it on the Puck Soup Twitter feed. And we wanted to know from you what the name of the team is that he plays for.
Jeff Belinsky's got a good one. The Ex-Husbands.
Ted Bigsby writes in, the Genericksburg Hockey Men.
Because there's 2 sticks, James McBee said the tummy sticks.
Ron, that's good. Ryan Taylor writes in the small town sports steams.
Patrick Schumar, it's an old Quebec team, Le Club du Hockey Generique.
Philip Armstrong, the Hockey Mick Hockey Town Hockeyists. Andrew Williams writes in the Mighty Dads.
Joe Brady, the Clip Arts.
Derp, DDD Derp writes in, because if you look at the logo, I kind of get this. X-Men First Pass. Joe Brady says the Clip Arts.
Twig Heaven.
Caps Have Stanley writes in the Bleached Holes. Wow. That's a hell of a thing.
The Bleached Holes. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's because he's going to wash. Alex Lewis just wanted to write in the Boston Nomas because the guy in the commercial does resemble Nomar Garcia-Pera a little bit.
Nomar.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah, they're very – I just like how it's basically the old Anaheim Ducks jersey, mm-hmm. but like without the Ducks logo.
I like this one, the stock images. Yeah. Oh, and somebody, Chino writes in a tie to the Snuggle Bear, the giggle sticks. Wait, does the Snuggle Bear giggle, or is that he's thinking about the fucking Pillsbury Doughboy?
I don't think the Snuggle Bear makes any noise or sounds.
No, the
it?
Snuggle Bear talks.
Does it?
Yeah, the Snuggle Bear looks at something and is like, nothing's going to get out these wrinkles.
No, that's Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, that's right.
Isn't Teddy Ruxpin the bear that talks?
The Snuggle Bear definitely talks.
I see this commercial all the time, and I can't remember anything from it. From that daytime TV selection of commercials you see all the time. Like the woman who holds up the brave face. You ever see that ad?
Mm, yeah.
It's just, but like she's not putting it in front of her face, which right. I still don't get. It's
okay.
That's every Seinfeld commercial break.
Listen, we love you guys. Profit Bar, Thursday.
And that's profit like in religion.
Like as in the prophet Isaiah.
Like you're seeing the future.
Right, not in you're like prophetic. You'll profit from this.
Prophetic.
Probably won't. June 21st in Dallas, Profit Bar. Doors at 6, show at 7. All ages, we should mention that. Yeah. $12 advance tickets, $15 at the door. It's going to be a really fun time. The live shows, if you've not been to one, and if you're in Dallas, you probably haven't been to one. Really fun time. We have a lot of goofy fun. The games we play live are super fun, and the Q&A afterwards can take on a life of its own. Since Frank Saravelli won't be there, it won't just be like, Frank, first time, long time. Really miss you on the Flyers beat.
I know, just fucking people ripping the new person on the beat for like 15 minutes. Like, yeah. Does anybody have any questions?
It was the strangest thing, because like when we did our Philly show, like just like how every other question at a Kevin Smith live show is like, Kevin, longtime fan, got a script for you to read. Every other question at the Frank's ever, I really think, Frank, you know, Donovan was a great quarterback and you were a great beat writer.
And everyone just claps. And Frank's just like, oh, the new guy's good too. I'm just, you know, it's thanks, I guess.
Yeah. All right. But we're going to have a cool Dallas guest, cool Dallas games. So do check it out. Profit Bar, June 21st. We'll see you there. And hey, we'll both be at the draft. So if you want to say hi to us the draft, okay. If you want to say hi to me at the draft, you can do that too.
Yeah. I'm not getting a credential from the NHL. Are you kidding?
Oh, you're not. Are you just coming in and out for that thing?
I'm just coming in and out.
Dude, draft tickets cost like $5. You can get them real cheap.
You think I'm going to give money that's going to go to Eugene Melnick's pockets?
If somebody has an extra ticket for the draft, give it to DeLozo.
I might. If I go, I'm not going to be like in a media capacity.
You're going to paint your face like the reporter in the Alex Pruitt story.
Hey, question for Rasmus Dahlin from the RasmusRascals.com.
You're going to be there in like the Fred Flintstone Buffalo hat. From the I saw a bunch of people wearing those hats once, Buffalo Sabres fans at the draft. They all had those, like, the big hat with the horns on it that, like, Fred Flintstone used to wear for the Water Buffalo Club.
Water Buffalo Club.
Yeah, there was a bunch of guys with those hats on at the draft. I think it was in Minnesota. And I was like, that's fucking amazing. So, yeah, paint your face like a Buffalo fan and be like, you know, Rasmus.
I'll do like a Blue Man Group thing with the blue head and everything.
That works.
Right?
All right. Thanks to Pruitt. Thanks to you guys for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll mention your names at the live show. Bye. Yeah,
see ya.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.